We're back for another Inside the U podcast. You can visit the website insidetheu.com. You can follow us on Twitter at InsideTheU or email the show InsideTheUpodcast@gmail.com. This is Christopher Stock here with David Lake and Nate Adelson. Guys, let's talk about the signing day. Mark Richt's first class. David, I just want to get it started by asking, you know, something we texted about, and you said there's no David Lakes in this class. Something we saw a little bit with Al Golden. What do you mean by that? And just kind of your thoughts on the class.
Yeah, so, you know, I think one kind of recurring thing that kept happening during the Al Golden era was kind of a last-minute scramble to fill spots. So, you know, as signing day approached with Al Golden in charge, it became apparent in a lot of these classes that, you know, they would have spots for 3 to 5 guys that they could go add, you know, offering maybe FAU commits or FIU commits, lower-level guys who would probably leave those commitments and come to Miami just to fill spots. And so I think that's, one thing that is pretty obvious about Mark Richt's first class at Miami is that it's a small class. 18 commits in the class it's a very low number. Like if you look at all the classes that are ranked ahead of them have more commitments and they all have at least 20. So Miami's class is small, but I think that was kind of by design. I think Mark Richt likes the guys he has, so he feels good about the quality, and he didn't want to sacrifice space just to fill space with guys who might not make an impact at Miami. And then if you keep doing that year after year, you got about 15 to 20 guys who probably shouldn't be on the roster. So Mark Richt kept the class small, but he kept the quality high. And so I guess that's what I mean. Just, you know, there's no real reaches, in my opinion, in this class. I pretty much like all the guys in the class. And, you know, I think they can all be contributors to the team in some kind of role.
Nate, just your impressions, maybe, you know, some of the things that happened with this class. And obviously, David, I mean, I definitely agree with what you're saying. And, you know, he didn't panic, you know. And I think sometimes even with a new coach, not just with Al, how he was doing things, but with a new coach, it's kind of like, let's get my guys in here, make this my team, so to speak, as soon as possible. So let's just go, you know, all out. And clearly he didn't do that. Nate, your thoughts maybe on this class?
Well, yeah, I wanted to kind of build off of what David was saying. When I looked at some of the recruiting classes over the past 3 to 4 years, there were always those top talents you'd get excited about. You know, Miami's always been able to draw those type of guys that, you know, are top of the level guys that, regardless of who the coach is, just because of Miami's location, they're going to get a few of those guys each class. It wasn't that they couldn't get top talent. But sometimes I think the bottom and the middle of the class are sometimes just as important as the top of the class. And when I'd look at the bottom of the class these past few years, I'd see a lot of question marks. And when you do that, like David said, year after year, that starts to be a problem. So when you look at Richt's class, yeah, you look at the bottom of the class. Is there no drop off from the top of the class? Of course not. There is, but it's not as big as it used to be. There's not guys that he took where you're asking yourself, does this guy belong at Miami? Can he really make an impact? There just seems to be more potential with some of the lower tier guys or lower rated guys. So I think that's a big difference, because that was always something I would see with the past classes. And I know Richt hasn't had a lot of time to work, but I already think he's taken a step in the right direction on that front.
I'd like to say, too, like, just one thing about this class and the job the staff did. Really, you can't discount how much of an uphill battle they kind of faced with closing this class, you know, with the way they did. They ended up with 4 10-star players, according to, you know, the 24/7 sports composite. And really, if you think about it, I mean, Mark Richt totally cleaned out the staff. So it's a totally new coaching staff at Miami. And really, most of that coaching staff wasn't in place until, you know, between Christmas and New Year's. So really, they had about a month and a week to really close this class down. And, I mean, that's tough in recruiting. It's all about relationships and kind of, really this staff had to hit the ground running and try and keep the guys they wanted in the class while also adding, you know, a handful of guys that they really liked at the various schools that they were recruiting at previously.
Well, we talked about a little bit about, you know, what's been going on at the bottom of the classes typically, but let's start with this class at the top. You know, who are the best guys or who are you most impressed with? And I guess let's start with Amon Richards, just because he was the one that they got on signing day. He was the big story of the day, and getting him, and I was up there in Wellington and had a chance to talk to him. I'll have a feature story there on InsideTheU.com. Talk to him, the coach a little bit, you know, talk to his quarterback. Just to kind of get to know him a little bit more. And I guess one thing that stood out to me is he was bigger than I expected. And he says he's trying to come in at 190 pounds. And I think he's a good 6'2". He feels like he's in that 6'3 range. I know he's listed on the side at 6'1.5". But he's a nice-sized receiver. And I think he's, if he gets to that size, and I expect him to because of where he's at now for the season, I think he's going to be able to make an immediate impact.
Well, Chris, like, I know – I've been talking a lot to Nate these last few days with signing day around, and I discovered that he is a huge Amon Richards fan. So I will let Nate gush about Amon.
Well, the first thing that stands out to me about Amon, and I know he plays at a school like Wellington, who really isn't well known. They don't have a ton of recruits. They don't have, you know, a roster stacked with Division I talent. He's really the first guy, I don't know if I can say ever there, but at least in a long, long time, to be this level of talent coming out of Wellington. But you look at the things that he's accomplished over the past 2 years. He had a solid sophomore year, but his junior year and his senior year particularly were, you know, he was putting up numbers that were unprecedented in South Florida. And that's saying a lot, because the amount of talent in South Florida at wide receiver, and now we're talking all time, we're not saying just this year or the last couple years, the amount of talent that's come out of South Florida at wide receiver is, you know, it would take me way too long to go through all the names. So anytime you're talking about a guy that's done something in South Florida as a receiver that's never been done before, that's already putting him in very elite company. I know his junior year, he had 21 touchdown catches. As far as I know, that's never been done in South Florida. And he also had 1,000 yards both of his seasons. And that's, I believe, only been done once in South Florida. So you're just putting him in elite company with that. But he's the type of guy where he's not, you know, overly fast. He's not, you don't look at him and say, oh, he's just going to run by people. And he's not overly physical. You know, he's not a guy like, he's not that Andre Johnson that I've seen some people throw out there. He doesn't have that type of build or that type of playing style. But he's just smooth. He never looks out of control. He obviously, his hands are very good. You're not going to get 20 touchdown catches by accident. And he just knows what he's doing. He's a polished receiver. And yeah, I agree with David and Chris. I expect him to make an impact day one at Miami. I would say he's the best guy they landed in this class.
Yeah, he's a very, very good receiver. I'd say he's similar to like a Stacy Coley type. Stacy's probably a little more explosive, but Amon might be a little more smooth. So, you know, that type of receiver, a guy that can come in, run some good routes. I mean, he should translate well to the college game immediately. He's also a very smart guy, so he's going to pick up the offense quickly. And, you know, he should make an immediate impact. To me, he's the best receiver they're taking in the class. You know, they have Sam Bruce and Deontay Mullins as well, who are also highly rated guys. But in my opinion, I take Amon over those two.
You know, and you say that, and to me, I look at it and look at where they're ranked and things like that. To be honest, I don't think it's close. I think he's that much further ahead of those two guys. I think he's that good. I think he's going to have that good of a career and an impact. You know, you look at it, you know, 24/7, the composite there, he's 28th nationally. And to me, he should be much higher. And I don't say this very often about guy, you know, like, we're not just saying this about just every single guy that picks Miami. I just think he's very good. And kind of going back to Nate, what you said about Wellington, you know, going up there, the coach had a perfect quote about it, called him he's their prodigal son. Like, they look at him as he changed the face of their program. And He's embraced by the community and the school and everything. So it was really interesting to see that, and everyone's excited, and everyone obviously clearly cheered there. That was pulling for him to pick Miami when he made the announcement. So yeah, like I said, there's skills you see with him that excite you. That the hands, you know, he's that typical. You said he's smooth. He's a typical basketball player that made a smooth transition to football at receiver. So he just has that smoothness about him, and he's going to be fun. And I like I said, I think he's. Mark Richt told him he expects him to be a freshman All-American. Richards agreed that was the goal, and I don't see there's any reason why he won't be able to do that, because they're going to need receivers, and they have a quarterback that can throw him the ball.
Yeah, I think just looking at other parts of the class too, Chris, I think one thing that kind of gets overlooked on a day like signing day is the early enrollee guys, right?
Absolutely. So, yeah.
You know, these are guys who, for Miami in particular, are a huge part of this class. So they're already there on campus. They're going through the off-season workouts. They're experiencing the college classes already, kind of transitioning to what's expected at the college level. And I know on signing day that Miami made them available to the media, and you got to spend some time with those guys, Chris. I guess what stood out to you about those guys? What kind of impression did they make on you?
Well, to me, yeah. So I talked to each one individually, working on a story on those three and kind of how they've gotten to know each other. And I think the big thing that stands out to me, and I called you right afterwards to talk about it, just they come across as the real deal. You know what I mean? I think sometimes with these linebackers, or just players in general, you're kind of like, well, you know, he doesn't quite seem as good as they expect, or not quite what you see, but getting to know their personalities a little bit. They seem like the real deal moving forward as the trio that will be a starting trio at some point, and probably sooner than people expect. But, Shaq Quarterman, you know, he's that middle linebacker type that's, you know, sits there in the middle, and he's kind of their leader, kind of a more in control type of guy. Zach McLeod is a guy that's real physically gifted and tall and built, and it seems like he'll fit in at strong side. And then Mike Pinckney's got the biggest edge of them all, and I had a good talk with him, and I like his edge, and you know, I kind of told him, like, don't lose your edge, you know, that attitude and that thing that he has, that I think that's going to make him, that has made him successful, and that's going to make him successful at this level. He's that weak side, you know, just athletic and kind of run after guys, and I think all three guys are run and strike type guys, and they're all going to grow together. They're already in there. They're getting to know each other quite a bit. And one thing that, you know, that kind of stood out too, that just a reminder, Rick said it when I asked him, and then defensive coordinator Manny Diaz said the same thing, in terms of these three guys are not only growing together as freshmen now, but they're not behind, because it's a new staff, a new defense. So right. It's not like they're behind the rest of the other guys in the room. And I thought that was something impressive. And also, to me, if they catch up, you know, sooner than later, they're going to pass some people on depth charts. But it's going to be fun when it's time for all three of those guys to start. And I expect that to happen.
Yeah. I mean, to me, linebacker is kind of the strength of this class. I think, like you said, all three of those guys you project as future starters. And I think sooner rather than later, to be honest. I like the talent of all three of those guys. And yeah, I mean, they're also just very bright and sharp guys too. So
yeah, absolutely.
You know, I think linebacker is a position that Miami needs to get back to having dudes. And I think this class is a good start, you know, as Mark Richt looks to get Miami back in general. I think those linebackers can be the leader of the defense here moving forward.
I just want to jump in and add one thing about that group of linebackers. I know Miami's taken a lot of early commitments, and they ended up losing plenty of them. And so you can certainly criticize that strategy all you want. But I think the fact that all three of those guys committed early absolutely allowed them the opportunity to develop that close connection, so that when they got on campus, they weren't saying, hey, what's your name? Hey, how you doing? What do I know about you? They weren't getting to know each other. They had a bond that went back, especially with Shaq and Mike, since they're from the same area. But all three of them had known each other for over a year pretty well. That connection was there more obviously with that group than most guys coming in. So the fact that they're getting there and they already have that established is definitely an advantage. And the fact that that all generated out of the fact that they all committed so early and were in contact from the early stages. So I absolutely think that was a huge factor in the bond that they have now, what you see and is obvious about them dealing with them at this point when they've just enrolled.
Nate, you had a few stats. You mentioned the decommitments. You had a few stats from the class, and I was able to use them in a couple stories that I wrote. But you want to share that for the podcast listeners, just a few stats that you come up with. And people that don't know, Nate has a wide, you know, just a huge list of stats and back on classes, and has a real good historical perspective on recruiting with Miami. And I find it quite interesting whenever he's able to drop nuggets. So what do you got for us now?
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the ones that we just talked about a little bit was just the decommitments in this class. They ended up by signing day, they had 23 decommitments. And if you want to count Amon Richards and Zach McLeod, who they got back later, then it would be 25. So it's up to you if you want to factor that in to the total count. But that's, I mean, by far the highest number that I've ever heard, not only in the history of Miami recruiting, but in the history of recruiting in general. Granted, I don't know other programs as well as I know the Miami program, so I wouldn't know for sure, but I just can't imagine any other program has ever approached a number like that. I remember for the 2015 class, Miami ended up with right around 15 decommitments, and that was kind of unprecedented at the time. So having 23 in this class is obviously far beyond even what we saw last year. Now, obviously, the circumstances are different. There's a head coaching change, and there's naturally going to be some turnover. You're going to see numbers that are higher than usual just because of the shakeup, and not just with Rick coming in replacing Golden, but like David mentioned, they turned over the entire staff. All 9 assistant coaches were not the guys that were there during the season. So it really is a lot. You know, the changes were dramatic. They weren't minor. But still, to see 23 decommitments is, you know, it's historical. I mean, it's got to be the first time in recruiting where a team has lost more guys throughout the process than they signed on signing day, where the group that was with you at a point is bigger than the group that is with you at the end. You just don't see that. So that's something I don't expect to see that as much moving forward now that there's going to be more stability. Obviously, Rick is going to be the guy for the foreseeable future, so there shouldn't be as much of an issue with that. But it's certainly a trend to follow going into the future. It's not, you know, I think that's a problem. And when you see that many guys bailing, you know, it's just chaotic. It's hard to deal with.
David, do you have any, just kind of moving on, next group? We talked about Richards, we talked about some linebackers. Is there some guys that you want to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, I think two guys worth touching on that are good players that Miami signed, and maybe, you know, they kind of get overlooked because they've been committed to Miami for quite a while now. I think running back Travis Homer and then defensive end Joseph Jackson. I think they're two guys who I think could be impact players at Miami when it's their time. Jackson is an extremely impressive looking prospect. He's got, you know, the build you want at defensive end. He's got the athleticism you want at defensive end. I just think, you know, if this coaching staff can put that dog in him, and it's going to be scary. He has all the ability to be as good as he wants to be. And then Travis Homer is the best running back in the state of Florida this year. So I think a lot of that kind of gets lost in the national signing day hoopla, you know, the guys that are deciding, everyone wants to know where those guys are going. But Miami also did have some guys committed for a long time that ended up signing with Miami that were good players. And Joseph Jackson, Travis Homer, I would say are two of those players.
I just wanted to touch on Joseph Jackson real quick. I have a good story about that just came up within the last 24 hours. Yesterday I was watching a 2017 wide receiver from Glade Central, who's really not a big deal yet, doesn't have any offers or anything like that. And I noticed that Glade Central just happened to play Gulliver. So I really wasn't watching the Joseph Jackson's highlights, but he just happened to come up in someone else's. And this guy for Glade Central, you know, he's a typical Glade Central receiver, just can run all day, amazing speed. And I happened to see a screen play where he broke into the clear and Joseph Jackson was running with him. And Joseph Jackson has 70, 80 pounds on this guy. And Glade Central, any Glade Central receiver can fly, especially this guy that I happened to be watching. And I, like I said, wasn't watching for Jackson, but to see him running stride for stride and being the only guy on the Gulliver defense that could keep up with this Glade Central receiver, was like, it was one of those wow moments. You just don't see a guy like Jackson, who's as big as he is, that can run like he does.
Yeah, that'll certainly be interesting to see how that develops, because I think everyone, the defensive line, I mean, it's such a big need for Miami. It's been such a gap in their development and in recent years, and I think everyone's just like, can this guy be an impact guy? Anytime you see any D lineman sign with UM, so I think that'll be interesting to watch. Can Joseph Jackson be a dominant defense, just a productive, dominant defensive player that we've seen at Miami in years past? So, yeah, his development, and David, you mentioned it, just his athleticism, the things you want. It'll just be interesting to see if this staff can get the most out of him. And I think just in general, just with the defensive guy, we mentioned the linebackers, but, it'll be interesting to see, because we criticized the defense in years past so much of what they were running and did it fit right. I wonder if we're going to see guys really blossom under a new defense. Going back to talking to Manny Diaz a little bit, I asked him, because I said, you're known as an aggressive defensive coordinator. Do you think your style fits well with what the talent base, the recruiting area has, just because Miami players down here are typically known for being aggressive players, aggressive defensive players that fit well into 4-3 systems. And I asked if, that's a good mix. And he thinks so. He said, just his whole philosophy goes back to being a speed defense. That's what he kind of grew up on, and that's what his philosophy is. And he just kind of said, we're going to play fast and things like that. And David, I told you, it just seems like it wasn't just talk with him. Sometimes we'd hear the previous staff say, oh, we want to play fast, we want to do this and that. And it just felt like, it just didn't feel real when they said it. But the way Manny spoke about it and his philosophies, it just seems like that's what they're going to do. And it's going to be interesting to see how a guy like Joseph Jackson will fit in these linebackers and these other, the defensive backs also.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, two guys who I'm going to look at right off the bat when spring practice starts is Al-Qaeddine Muhammad and Chad Thomas. Are they just going to let them go? Get upfield, make plays in the backfield, attack the quarterback. We've talked plenty in the past about how frustrating it was watching Miami defensive linemen in the previous scheme have to go sideways before they go upfield. So it's going to, Al-Qaeddine Muhammad in particular, let's see what he can do in this new scheme, and it should be fun seeing how Manny Diaz uses those type of guys.
Nate, I want to get your opinion on Deontay Mullins. He's a guy you've talked to, and David, I know you talked to him too, and I as well, just real quick with Deontay, I was kind of looking at the list, Deontay and even like a Malik Young. When we talked to I remember talking to him when they were younger, and it just seemed like Miami was not going to be where they were going to go. They just weren't that interested. And then it's just interesting to show. It just shows you that recruiting changes, and when you read articles, just kind of moving forward on guys that we talked to early, maybe not don't take it all, just take it with a grain of salt, because things can change. It certainly changed for those two guys. Just want to make that point. But Nate, with Deontay Mullins, everyone wants to know, is he going to get in? Your opinion on that, and just kind of maybe your thoughts on Deontay as a player.
Well, just before I touch on Deontay's academic situation at all, when I think back to when he was younger, and he, like you said, he made some pretty strong comments about not wanting to be at Miami. I don't remember if there was a particular reason for it, but he was pretty adamant that he wasn't interested in staying local. He wanted to get away. I remember Auburn being a school he particularly brought up in the early going, and his recruiting started early because he was getting time on varsity as a freshman. He was big on the 7-on-7 circuit early in his career, so he had that notoriety, and he was making the one-handed catch that everybody focuses on from the Under Armour game. It, as spectacular as that was not the first time that he had done things like that. If you go on YouTube, you can find some catches from much earlier in Deontay's career from 7-on-7 stuff where he made ridiculous one-handed grabs similar to the one that everybody saw on national TV, but I think Deontay not wanting to come to Miami in the early going, it wasn't really a product of him not wanting to go to Miami. It was a product of that they weren't there as early in his recruitment as some other schools. And so he was really looking at the SEC. He had taken some visits very early, and you could tell he was kind of very intrigued by going other places. But as soon as Miami offered, you saw an absolute 180 in his attitude about towards Miami and the idea of staying local. It was like as soon as he got that, he was ready to go. So you could tell that those negative comments that he had made earlier about Miami were really just because they didn't want him yet. And as soon as they did, you know, that changed. That was out the window. But just touching on his abilities, obviously he's had kind of an interesting career. His name was on the scene very early, but he really didn't necessarily progress a ton throughout his career. He kind of stayed what he was, and then obviously you want to see him really take that step forward as a senior, and he didn't play as a senior because of his academic situation. So as far as his actual chances to get in, I mean, it's always hard to know. You know, when you're dealing with grades and GPAs and things like that, especially in South Florida, it doesn't seem like anything's ever definite. Just when you think somebody is in for sure, then they don't get in. Just when you think somebody has no chance, they get in. So you can't stand by anything 100% here. But I just keep going back to the fact that he did miss the season for academics. That's a very rare situation. I've seen other guys who had academic question marks that were eligible to play, even if they didn't end up making it into college eventually, they didn't have to sit out. So I don't know his GPA. I don't have concrete information about where he stands, but it's not a good sign when somebody misses a season of football due to whatever their situation is in the classroom.
And if he doesn't get in, let's just assume, being speculative here, if he doesn't get in, I think the most likely scenario is his prep school for a semester there in the fall, and then he's at Miami next January, right? I mean, is that what you guys kind of assume?
Yeah, I think he ends up at Miami. I mean, if he has to go JUCO, that's a whole nother deal. But if he just goes prep school for this fall semester, I still think he ends up at Miami.
Yeah, he always seemed to me like, you know, he seemed very solid, very open about his affinity for Miami. And he's talked how much he's talked about how much he wants to play in front of his mother and his family. And obviously, you know, that's not going to change. So I would expect him, as long as he can get, even if he doesn't get in, if he has to iron out some academic issues at a prep school, I would still expect him to come back around, because I don't see, as long as Miami's there for him, I don't see his love for the Hurricanes going away soon.
Nate, can you talk more? Let's keep jumping around here. I know, because I feel like we're going to get done with this podcast and people are going to be like, well, why didn't you talk about so-and-so and so-and-so? They want to hear about everybody. Is there somebody else you want to jump to, or you want me to just throw out some names here?
Well, I mean, I know you mentioned Malik Young a little bit earlier, and I can touch on his story a little bit, because his is different than Deontay's. Malik was also on the scene pretty early, maybe not quite as early as Deontay, but certainly as a sophomore, when he kind of blew up, I believe, at the same time as his highly touted teammates, Trayvon Mullen and Benjamin Victor. They were all, you know, the spring of their sophomore years, they were exploding with offers and becoming national prospects. And Miami was involved with Malik from the pretty early stages. But like Deontay, he really didn't seem very interested in staying local. I didn't follow it quite as closely then because he was so young. But he just seemed like, again, he wanted to get away. He seemed big on Ohio State. I think I remember Clemson maybe being in there for him. So it's not that Miami wasn't there, but he just didn't seem interested. But that disinterest continued a lot longer than it did in Deontay's case. Really, until Mark Richt came in, there wasn't even the slightest hint that Malik Young was considering Miami. And I don't think he was. I don't think it was a case where it just wasn't public. I don't think he really entertained the idea of going to Miami until Mark Richt came along, just because he was committed to Georgia and that established relationship was already in place. So when Richt came to South Florida, that's when that was really the first time, I don't know about ever, but in a long, long time, that he had considered it in even a possibility. So once that happened, I think Richt reached out to Young and things kind of just progressed from there. I mean, it was pretty soon after Richt got the job that the rumors started about that Young was very likely going to come to Miami, and that only seemed to gain momentum with time. And by the time it got into January and towards when Malik was going to take his official visit, it was just a formality that he was going to come. And he ended up even committing before he came for his official visit, which was a bit of a surprise. Not that he would pick Miami, but the timing that it was before he even got on campus. So that just showed you how strong Miami was in his mind, that he felt like he didn't need to wait anymore.
Yeah, David, do you have any thoughts there on Malik or somebody else you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, I guess two guys to highlight too would be Romeo Finley, the safety out of Niceville that Miami kind of pulled in the week leading up to signing day. He's from the Panhandle area, Florida, and I think he's a nice little get for Miami in this class. He's that physical type safety that can really tackle in the back end of a defense. He's very aggressive. He plays very fast. So I think he's a little bit of an underrated pickup in this class. And then Giovanni Haskins is in my opinion, he's a very, very good tight end prospect. He played quarterback for his high school team in New Jersey. But he projects definitely as a tight end and he wants to play tight end at the next level. He's very athletic at 6'4", 235. He's not the fastest guy in a straight line, but he cuts and moves extremely smoothly for a player of his size. So he's probably going to need like a year to develop, maybe a redshirt year. But then after that, he's going to be an impact guy on the defense, I think, for Miami. And then, three other kind of late additions to the class were Trey Johnson, offensive tackle from Orlando, kind of an under-the-radar guy. He's a long guy, 6'7", 295, but he has good feet, and I think he's kind of more of a project, but he's a guy who has that offensive tackle body, and Miami kind of needs to add some more of those guys in the mix to this offensive line group they have. The guys they have are more kind of guard body types, and Johnson's more of a tackle. So Johnson's going to be a project, but give him 2 or 3 years and we'll see how he's looking. Tyreek Martin is a guy who Miami thinks will grow into being an athletic defensive tackle. Their defensive line coach, Craig Kulagowski, recruited him at Missouri. He was committed to Missouri, and then he decommitted once Kulagowski moved to Miami. So Kulagowski started recruiting him at Miami, and he eventually jumped in. And Martin was being chased by some pretty good competition, too. I mean, Will Muschamp at South Carolina wanted him, and Missouri was still recruiting him hard to get him to stick with that or come back to that commitment. But Kulagowski got him in the end, and he's excited about his potential. And Martin does look like a guy who does know how to kind of get skinny at the line of scrimmage and get through an offensive line and make plays in the backfield. So, and then Jeff James, he's a guy who's the nephew of former UM running back Edgerrin James. He didn't really play high school football until this senior year due to some off-field stuff that he says, you know, he was a little bit of a troublemaker early on in his life. But he played football this senior year, and he finished the year with 9 interceptions. So he certainly flashed some playmaking ability, and just another good playmaker at defensive back, wide receiver for Miami to add in the class.
You know, it's interesting, David. You kind of jumped over the names, and I was kind of hoping you weren't going to say the ones I wanted to talk about, and you didn't. Cedric Wright and Michael Irvin Jr. are two other guys in the class that we haven't talked about. And I wanted to bring them up because, you know, they're not highly rated guys. They're both 3-star guys. But I think one thing that stands out to me with the both of them are both, I think they're both going to be good program guys. I think they're both guys that are mature, smart. They're not going to be issues. You're thinking that everything is going to be fine with those two. And they're just going to keep progressing, you know. And I think they're going to be good program guys you want in your program to develop. Maybe there's some physical limitations with the both of them, obviously different positions, but you like maybe that they're going to continue to grow and just kind of be good kind of solid guys. Just with Cedric, you know, he's more of a safety, even though he's not real big. Maybe you'd want him to be more of a corner, but he's more of a safety. But again, smart guy, good guy you want in the program. And then Michael Irvin Jr., obviously with the name, a lot of people are going to expect a lot from him. To me, he's just like a good, solid tight end. You know, there's not a lot that you're overwhelmed with when you watch him, maybe, as far, you know, just making plays and things like that. But you like the program that he was at. And the thing is, too, and Nate, I know you want to talk about him because the numbers he put up before he got to Aquinas were off the charts. Like, he put up huge numbers. And then he goes to Aquinas, and then they obviously have a successful season. And you know how that works, where the, you know, guys aren't putting up monster numbers sometimes because there's other guys on the field, and sometimes they just get up big, and those guys, they don't, they kind of go different routes with winning the game as opposed to putting up monster numbers. And we'll get to Sam Bruce, obviously. We haven't talked about him, but we'll get to him too out of Aquinas. But Nate, your thoughts on Michael a little bit, and what I was talking about with him in Texas?
Yeah, well, I actually went out and saw Michael in person in Texas when he was a sophomore, and which was really the year that he exploded on the scene. He played as a freshman out in Texas, but his sophomore year, if I remember correctly, he broke 100 catches, which is, that's just astronomical production. But in Texas, I got to see his team practice out there. When he was in that program, it was kind of a smaller school. He was kind of their guy. Even as a sophomore, he was their guy, and he played wide receiver. And he also wasn't as big at the time as he is now, so it was an easier fit playing out wide rather than being in line and playing more of a traditional tight end role. But he was the guy. They got him the ball all the time. I mean, he was, you know, he was a force, but he also was really the focus of their offense. Whereas when he shows up at St. Thomas Aquinas, you know, Michael's talented, but St. Thomas is just overflowing with not just talent across the board, but especially wide receivers, running backs, skill position guys. He just kind of blends in at St. Thomas. He doesn't stand out, and that's not a negative against him. It's just a reflection of where St. Thomas is at from a talent perspective, that they have so many options. And St. Thomas has been that way for at least 4 or 5 years now, where they don't have individuals who put up superstar numbers. They just don't run their offense that way, and there's too many options to spread the wealth across for any one guy to put up numbers. So I always take that into account when I'm looking at any offensive player from St. Thomas Aquinas. If their numbers don't look great, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Look at what some of those guys have gone to do at the college level or even higher. Look at guys like Giovanni Bernard, James White, people doing well in the NFL when, you know, James White wasn't even a starter in high school. He was Giovanni Bernard's backup, and he goes on to have an unbelievable career at Wisconsin, and then he's doing pretty reasonably in the NFL with the Patriots. So you don't necessarily write a guy from St. Thomas Aquinas off because he didn't put up huge numbers. And Michael didn't put up huge numbers this year, but he knows that was going to be the case going in. I remember talking to him about that when he decided to transfer. He wasn't under the impression that he was going to be the superstar of the offense. He went there to get excellent coaching, to really, he said the biggest thing about transferring to St. Thomas was to prepare him for life at the next level and potentially the NFL, and that he felt that St. Thomas would prepare him better for that than being at the school he was in Texas. So, and I think he got that out of his move, and I think that will help him moving forward to Miami, and if he hopes to go on in his football career after that.
David, yeah. Sam Bruce, your thoughts? Just kind of moving straight on, because, you know, the Aquinas thing, and you know, his production wasn't quite there, maybe that you would expect. Maybe it's part of what Nate was talking about, or maybe it's just a bit, how do you view Sam Bruce as a prospect, because he obviously is well known and he's someone that a lot of Miami fans or people in Florida knew about.
Yeah, I mean, I think Sam's gonna be a guy who is obviously a slot receiver in the offense, and he's a guy who you throw some quick screens, maybe some bubble screens, and see what he can do after the catch, and also he's a guy who could compete for kick return and punt return duties if he shows that ability in practice. So, you know, I think Sam's a fine option in the slot. He's definitely small. He's definitely 5'7", 5'8", and, you know, he's got short arms. So he's pretty similar in build to Braxton Berrios, who's on the team now. But Sam is explosive. He can really run. He can accelerate quickly. So, yeah, I mean, he's a fine option in this offense. Like I said earlier, I think Amon Richards is the best receiver in this class. Sam is rated the best, but I like Amon. But, I mean, look, Sam's a fine player. He's a solid four-star slot receiver.
The other two guys I think we've missed is Jack Allison, Patrick Bethel. I know we've talked about him a lot when they were at the Under Armour week, and David, obviously with Jack Allison, we keep asking you about him because you saw him a little bit in high school. You know, Jack was at the signing day at UM where they allowed the five guys talking, and Jack was there and talked with the media and things like that. And You know, I think the thing with Jack, you know, I think the biggest thing that he understands that he's going to take some time, you know, and he's embraced that and going to take some time to develop. And Mark Rick said some good things about him on signing day and likes how he throws the ball, you know, big kid. And he actually said he liked his athleticism for how he moves at 6'5", 6'6". And I think that's the thing with Jack. He definitely feels like he's more of that 6'6" range. Like he's very tall, you know, it's not one of those, you know, over exaggerated 6'5". I mean, the guy's tall and he's going to put on weight, only a matter of time.
Yeah. I think Jack, you know, the thing with Jack that he needs to improve over these next 2 years or so is his accuracy. So if he can improve his accuracy and kind of his anticipation and how he sees routes develop and guys get open quicker, then yeah, I mean, he should be Miami's starting quarterback. He certainly has the tools, and he seems like a guy who wants to work. So if he does put in that work, he's likely to be the starter for Miami after Brad Kaya.
And then Bethel, you mentioned Patrick Bethel, you know, you mentioned the defensive line coach. You mentioned what he had to say. You want to share that and maybe some, which is kind of interesting. I thought that was said about him.
So on the National Signing Day show that Miami broadcasted on ESPN3, you know, they had all the assistant coaches talking and they had Coach Kuligowski talking about Bethel. And, you know, he just kind of insinuated that, yeah, I mean, Bethel right now, he's already up to 265 in the weight room. And he kind of looks like a guy right now who's going to be very good defensive end against the run. So he can really knock a tight end backwards and kind of set the edge well. He didn't really say too much about his pass rushing abilities. I'll say, you know, at Under Armour Week, Bethel certainly had some things to improve on with his pass rushing technique and things like that. But yeah, I mean, and then Kuligowski also said, you know, Bethel's at 265 now. Who knows where he'll end up weight-wise. So kind of insinuating maybe he continues to grow and maybe he ends up being a D tackle. Now, I don't know if Bethel would necessarily like to hear that. But yeah, I mean, you know, Bethel is probably more of a bigger defensive end who's better at stopping the run right now than he is with pass rushing.
Nate, any thoughts maybe on this class? Any we've kind of ran through everyone here. Just any final thoughts or just kind of your thoughts on this class at all?
Well, I just go back and touch on kind of what we talked about at the very beginning of this podcast, and that it was, I think the theme, overriding theme, is the quality over quantity. Would they have loved to have gotten four or five more guys for depth purposes, especially at a couple spots like wide receiver and corner? Sure, they would have. But when you come in and you only have 5 or 6 weeks to put everything together, it's not going to go perfectly. You're not going to be able to have the results that you'd love to have and that you may be able to put together with a full year to work on it. When they have that with the 2017 class, it'll be interesting to see if they can get that together and get that quantity that they want. But yeah, he wasn't willing to sacrifice on the quality front. He didn't take guys just to take guys and fill spots. That wasn't something he was willing to do. So that's the biggest thing that stands out to me about this group, is that it might be small, but the state, you know, Mark Richt had a standard, and if guys didn't meet that standard, then it wasn't going to be, you know, it just wasn't going to be accepted in his eyes.
Yeah. So I just want to talk about, so that the 2016 class is definitely going to be something that will be interesting to see how they develop. And you talk about the five that are in, I think they have a chance, you know, those three linebackers chance to play, even Patrick Bethel, because he's a defensive end, defensive lineman, you know, and we expect Jack to obviously redshirt and whatnot. So those guys will be interesting to watch in spring ball, which we are told it's supposed to be the week after spring break there in mid-March. So we'll definitely, but we'll stay in, you know, we'll keep things going with podcasts and keep checking out the website. Again, like I said earlier, got some features on the linebackers, an in-depth thing on Amon Richards. So, you know, talking to some coaches. So there'll be stuff on the site. We hope everyone kind of stays on board. I know it's a popular thing, or maybe it's something where you only want to stay till sign day, but we appreciate when people stay on board, because we're going to keep putting out stuff. And I know, Nate, you've already started on some 2017 guys. And, you know, it just keeps going. There's always news. And obviously the basketball team's doing well right now. And we'll have stuff on them. And the baseball's just around the corner for you Hurricane fans that are big into the baseball program. So definitely appreciate everyone listening, everyone following on signing day and reading all the stories and all the support you guys have shown on Twitter and whatnot. It's been great.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun time, like you said. I mean, football season happens in the fall, but the spring is also an exciting time too, because it's when you start learning about these new recruits. You got spring football. The basketball team's looking like it's going to be in the tournament this year. And then, you know, the baseball team's ranked like sixth in the country right now going into the season. So a lot of good stuff going on with the Miami Athletic program, and we'll have more podcasts, more content on the website. So yeah, it'll be fun churning out more content for you guys.
All right. Well, yeah, thanks again for listening. You can visit at Inside the U on Twitter, you know, InsideTheU.com as always. You know, if you have any questions or comments on the show, Inside the U podcast@gmail.com. Nate, David, we'll talk to you guys later.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.